Splendid and marvellous package as ever.
Putting together an audio show which entertains and educates the globe is a piece of cake. When you've got the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Edition teams on the case for Siren 107.3 FM and sirenonline.co.uk.
But of course there is one piece of vital news that wasn't actually given out there, Jessica. A bit of a shocker. But it is this. We have, all the way from Scotland, with a special dedication to, indeed, Emma Tinson, all the best from Peter Kerr, the official song of the eight wins there. Emma, congratulations.
I forgot about this.
Peter didn't, and there it is, you see.
Thank you so much.
There we are. You see, celebrate and rejoice. All sorts
so
of good news, you see.
It's so long. This is going to take me a while to read.
Well, I thought the same, but it's such a wonderful read, you'll probably find yourself just speeding through the whole thing. But
thank you so much. I completely forgot about that.
It's always worthwhile sort of making those routines. And Jessica, of course, how's the In Lennox book coming on? There we are.
My mum.
This must be underwater love. The way I feel it seeping all over me. This must be underwater love. The way I feel it. O que que é esse amor da água? Deve sentir muito parecido.
To open up a whole range of things there. Fish, if nothing else. Underwater, Love and Smoke City. What a perfect introduction to your good self, Michelle Monroe. How are you, sir? How are you, Michelle?
How are you, sir?
You caught that, didn't you? I know. It's look, the script sometimes. Oh, I don't know. Let's just...
I think it's my low dulcet tone.
I'm going to just go on record now saying Michelle Monroe is not going to be undergoing gender realignment surgery in the near future. She is and remains perfectly female.
How are you?
I'm good, and we have in the studio the fabulous Jessica Ward and Emma Tinson, both of whom are key fans of Matt Monroe and have become fans since you're working through the whole process. So that's exactly. And they're keen to find out what magic, together with Richard Moore, of course, you have brought along for this particular episode of Michelle Monroe's Matt Monroe Selection.
Yes, Alex, this is exciting because today's song is one of my father's regularly performed in his live act during the early days of his career. And it's also one that he recorded several times for radio and television appearances. But oddly, it was never released on record during his lifetime. But since then, no less than four versions have seen the light of day. The first being a jazzy improvised jaunt, followed by the two others recorded for the BBC Saturday Club and Dad's own Matt's Kind of Music radio series. My choice for today is the fourth recording made with a big band arrangement by Johnny Spence. It was recorded during the sessions for the album I Have Dreamed on the 3rd of November 1964. In the end, the track wasn't chosen for release, perhaps because there was already quite a few swing numbers on the album. It was then forgotten about, and even the original studio tapes weren't kept. As luck would have it, one mono tape copy was made and lay hidden away in the archives for 43 years. It was only when researching for Dad's session listings that Richard and I discovered its existence, and it was finally issued on the compilation Matt at the Movies in 2007. The song is by Cole Porter and from the musical Can Can. But Alex, it's all right with me.
It's the wrong time and the wrong place. Though your face is lovely, it's the wrong face. It's not her lips, they're such tempting lips. But if some night you're free, well, it's all right. Yes, it's all right. It's all right. It's all right. It's all right.
Yes. Jessica Ward, what did you make of It's All Right With Me?
I loved it. It was very upbeat and, like you said, Emma, it's very jazzy.
Yeah.
Emma?
I liked it as well. It was quite... I felt like it was uplifting and I feel in a better mood.
Yeah. Exactly. Uplifting.
When I found that, I was... I mean, I cannot tell you how chuffed I was because it's really a jazz version, especially, you know, for my dad, sort of straying away from ballads completely. And he really lets rip on it and I love it. Mm.
It is another classic. And is it available still to be purchased and sorted out, Michelle?
Well, I mean, the thing is that, unfortunately, every single thing in the EMI catalogue has kind of been deleted at the moment.
No.
Well, yes, because Warner's, Universal came and bought it, then Warner's came and bought
now
it.
Now, that's what I call Matt Munro, surely, is just waiting to be made. They've had everything else.
It should do. Now, Matt of the Movies is one of those wonderful ones we do, which you might be able to find on one of the online websites still. Oh. But it's wonderful because all the movie tracks are on there, and not just the ones you associate Dad with, like From Russia and Born Free on days like these, but some other tracks, and you think, wow, I never knew he did that, you know.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it's one of my favourites.
Well, it's just as well we do these links on a regular basis at Siren 107.3 FM, otherwise who knows what could actually happen. Still,
well,
never mind.
It's been about 3 years, hasn't it? And do you know something? Apart from Christmas, we've never repeated a track.
No, exactly. Actually, it's been longer than that. I think we started off in 2010, so it's coming up to 4 years, actually.
Well, yeah, but we haven't repeated a track, I'm very proud of.
And that's so impressive. Even though sometimes we've had challenges with Richard not sending the track until the final moment. Sorry, Richard, it's OK. It's all right, we'll sort it through here.
But you see, in Richard's eyes, as long as it gets there, it's all right with
him. This is so true, exactly. Yeah, it's marvellous.
Listen, I'm so upside down in the house, since moving, that if not for Richard, I don't think I'd be on the programme.
Well, these are the critical sort of lines that we work through, so it's great stuff. Anyway, Emma, last two questions for Michelle Munro.
Of course. Michelle, have you had a fairly good telephonic link with us today?
I always do.
Oh, lovely. And will you be joining us again on the show anytime soon?
I will, in stultifying news, because I shall be live again. Alex, can you bear it? I mean, I shall be back on Wednesday, the 26th of November, on the Sirens Midweek Drive.
Very exciting.
I know. Can't bear it.
It's wonderful. It's wonderful. It just keeps that positivity going. Up next, yep. Alan Stevens on Doctor Who.
I saw the lamplight from your window. I didn't think you were home, sitting there all alone. So I came up to your room to ask you why. Why did you hurt me so? Why did you have to go away? I never wanted anything in my life. Not until I met you, I thought you'd see me through all the bad days that I had before I met you. Something in the past, never thought it couldn't last forever. There's one thing I can say, every day, how I miss you. Oh,
every single day, every single day, every single day that I'm without you. It's a little bit, that's a little bit, just a little bit, just a little more, just a little more than I've ever been hurt before. Every single day, every single day, every single day.
Your window. So earlier in the programme we heard Graham Harper's views on the Peter Capaldi era of Doctor Who, of course, and technically Stephen Moffat as well. Let's have a little informative line from Dan Wilson, writing for Metro magazine, and his line goes as follows. After a season of Peter Capaldi as Doctor Who, where are we? If there was little moon called Disappointment orbiting the planet Mift in the constellation of Slightly Concerned, I'd be there. Season 8 has not been a triumph. Peter Capaldi clearly has the makings of a fine Doctor, but it's hard to say we've really glimpsed his range, and it's hard to call out a stellar episode in Series 8 that will stand in the pantheon of classic Who. Dark Water was a promising setup for Death in Heaven, but the resolution left too many threads hanging. Rule 1, in Death in Heaven, the Doctor, who shouldn't lie, was telling whoppers. He lied to Clara right at the end. He hadn't found Gallifrey at all. He probably could have saved Danny Pink. It's hard to find much to like about Capaldi's portrayal, despite fine performances. And now we have a completely morally ambiguous Doctor. He's not a good man. He's not a bad man. That's disquieting. Never have we seen the Doctor so angry as when he hammered the TARDIS Council, repeatedly enraged when he reached Missy's coordinates. Interesting stuff there, Emma. Interesting, emotive stuff.
That is.
It's hard. It's hard hitting.
Very opinionated.
Very, very opinionated. You know.
Oh, I mean, got a bit worked up about that one.
The voice there of Dr. Fiona Moore, of course, who will be delivering a keynote session at the Telefantasy in Society conference on May the 6th. Shameless plug there.
Yeah.
Dr. Fiona Moore from Royal Holloway College, and of course, Alan Moore. Welcome to the program. How are you?
Alan Moore.
Alan Stevens. Well done.
Are you turning up again?
Easily mistaken, you know, creator of Watchmen. But no, it's Alan Stevens and Fiona Moore. So, earlier in the show, as they didn't manage to listen to the live broadcast because they were busy looking after Aisha and Zhukov and doing other such important things.
Aisha.
All right.
Aisha.
It's a cat, all right? It's not going to worry
not
too
much. Cat's a person.
All right. Emma, would you like to just appraise Alan and Fiona in terms of Graham's views when you put that question to him? Obviously he's a key fan of Harper's era.
Well, Graham seemed very disappointed, to be honest, with the series. He doesn't like Peter Capaldi. Well, he said
he likes Peter Capaldi.
He likes him as an actor, but not as the Doctor, because he thought he was too... He had other distinguished roles and thought that he wasn't really working as the Doctor.
Essentially, yeah, exactly.
And I didn't want to disagree with him, but I do.
Yeah. And the final line before we find out the views of Alan and Fiona from indeed the aforementioned Metro is, not since Donna Noble appeared in the TARDIS in her wedding gown have I been more wary of the next episode of Doctor Who. I hate being a grumpy Who fan, but bringing in Santa Claus does seem like a step too far. This is actually, and you can look it online, Dan Wilson for Metro. Okay.
Yeah, but he writes, what is the Metro? Is it some sort of rugby wave of free we connect to Daily Mail? Any opinion he's expressed has got to be suspect right from the very beginning, hasn't it?
Alrighty. Well, let's just... Emma, you've already said that you preferred the David Tennant era, is that correct?
Yeah, definitely. I loved Christopher Eccleston and David Tennant. I think those were my favourite two. I wasn't massively keen on Matt Smith, but... I thought it was all right. Mm-hmm. I think, I don't know, I like Peter Capaldi, but I don't know, I think the writing of this series, there were really good points, but I think there are a few points in the series where I felt less happy with it. Mm.
And obviously, from your own point of view, Jessica, your thoughts?
Well, to be honest with you, I haven't watched many Doctor Who episodes, so I probably am not the right person to talk about this. But from what I've seen out of the latest series, Peter Capaldi, I've seen him in a few other things. Like I think it's like Three Musketeers. I can't remember the exact.
Yeah,
yeah. 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 He was a brilliant actor, and I can see he is in Doctor Who. But yeah, I think the writing and script isn't as good as it could be.
Yeah.
I know, I'm being a bit harsh.
Stephen Moffat plays down Doctor Who ratings fall, according to the BBC website here. There's no drop-off in the ratings, he told an event in London with the Royal Television Society and said they'd be the same when iPlayer views are factored in. But we have enough of us, you know. It's time for the Magic Bullet Productions team, the Caldor City team, to actually take the stage. Over to you, Alan and Fiona.
We're one of the first.
Fiona, let's take you first. Let's get that measured Canadian viewpoint. After all, it was a Canadian, Sydney Newman, who actually launched the whole series with Verity Lambert in the first place.
Thank you, and there have been many other Canadians involved with the production series over the years. Andrew Cartmell, John Lucarotti, Jerry Davis, etc., etc.
Exactly. And Jerry Davis connects the Cybermen, of course, with the whole region, so go for it.
Yes, anyway. To be honest, I'd say this series was generally more hit than miss, as it were. There were some very, very good stories. You know, I quite like Michelle Gomez as the master, you know.
Mistress.
I also liked watching people freak out over the fact that Michelle Gomez is the master.
Mistress.
I'd like her back. there was definitely, I mean, we've started working through them again for the purpose of actually reviewing them. And, the first two stories were very good. Robot of Sherwood was...
still awful.
Yeah, still awful, though, you know, kind of now that the series is over, it's a bit easier to just kind of laugh and go, you know, oh, well, you know, it was a bit of an outlier. Mm-hmm. So, I'd say there's three stories this season that I, really thought were...
awful?
Yeah. Pretty much, you know.
So, what about Kill the Moon?
That was terrible.
Yeah, that one, I'm afraid I didn't, it started well, but then, in the first place, the willful suspension of disbelief went out the window quite quickly to the point where I couldn't even enjoy it anymore.
Oh,
and secondly, I kind of, the whole business with Courtney, she's special because she's going to be president,
You've also got to say that actually for a school caretaker to whip off a young child in a police box, it's not really the best way to actually give that message out.
Yeah, and I was sort of like worried by the series in that, like, you know, a whole class in one of the later episodes ended up knowing about the Doctor and the TARDIS.
And
are they not going to tell people?
Having a sleepover in the National History Museum. What key stage is that supposed to happen? Sorry, Fiona, we're just cutting across there. But anyway, carry on.
Saying that, that one was a particularly dreadful one. Mm-hmm. But, despite that, there were several really good stories. And generally speaking, I felt the season worked pretty well. A few issues, I thought that portraying Danny Pink as a, a passive-aggressive, boyfriend from hell with issues who Clara should dump as fast as possible was good. I'm not entirely sure the production team realized that they were portraying somebody who Clara ought to dump as fast as possible. I think they actually liked him and didn't really see any problem, considering, by the way, that when, they killed him off, it was all, boo-hoo, terrible, sad, rather than, she's actually had a bit of a near-miss here.
Yeah, unfortunately, Danny didn't have a near-miss, which is why I got run over. Sorry, I couldn't resist it.
Very funny. And missed the mark on, several occasions. When it was bad, it really managed to do it absolutely spectacularly. It wasn't just meh. It was, dear God, people are going to be talking about this for years.
Right. Okay.
And, while I generally liked the last episode, I'm another one that was sort of like, Santa...
Santa and Alien, if you look at the trailer. Santa and Alien.
Very cheesy.
Fiona, I'm not, out of respect for your views, going to ask you to give a score out of 10 for this, so you'd be pleased to know about that. I thought it'd ease away.
You.
Exactly. But let's move on to Alan. What are your thoughts, Mr. Stevens?
I've been pretty critical of the series as it's been going along, and really, sometimes, you've got to watch all of it and see the end of it, and probably see it again through before you can really make a
value of judgment.
I think actually, hand on heart, I think this season has probably been the best New Who season they've ever done.
Good heavens.
And previously I'd said...
Shaking of the heads in the studio here. Emma's shocked.
Eccleston was the previous best season they've ever done. And they're based on the fact that there are more good episodes than bad episodes. I think Eccleston hit 5 excellent episodes in his series 1. And I think this series hit 6 excellent episodes. And whereas Eccleston hit 3 very, very bad episodes in his first season, this season just hit 3 as well. A lot of the Tennant era I wasn't very keen on because I don't think RTD really... He was very much in sort of the, crash car crash TV sort of thing. banging this idea together and this idea together. And if you actually sat and had a fridge moment about it, you realise it didn't really make a lot of sense. And a friend of mine called Stephen Allen, I met up with a few years again after a 17-year break, met up with him, and we started watching the show from the beginning. And I did find a lot of the Tennant stories a particular trial to watch, and particularly the last lot, you know, the End of Time and stuff like that, which I mean, the Mortal to Mars was the best one, but, you know, what was the other one, Planet of the Dead? I mean, that was...
Waters of Mars, of course, directed by Graham Harper.
Yeah, well, Graham Harper did a very good job of that. Oh. So, no, I'd say that the general, you know, I think it was quite an ambitious season, and they were trying to tell a cohesive sort of storyline, which probably didn't benefit from being, you know, each episode a week apart. It's more of a box set series than a weekly series.
So if our direct extra on correspondent Phil Leonis is listening to this, where it's morning, it's 10:20 a.m. in the delights of Los Angeles at present, is this likely to convince him to say, give the series a try? Give it a try, Phil Leonis, you know, check it out. You know, cause,
I don't know, I mean, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because, I mean, when I first watched Dark Water, I had a lot of questions thinking, yes, how does this all fit together? And then I watched part two and thought myself, I'm not entirely sure if that was all answered. And I basically went on Facebook and said, well, I enjoyed it, you know.
I
think it was like a lot of, you know, it was tosh, but I enjoyed it.
You were particularly critical of the way in which Brigadier Alistair Lethbridge-Stewart's daughter was introduced in the Matt Smith era. Is this something that you felt it was appropriate to see the Brigadier become a Cyberman?
I can't remember being critical of her being introduced.
Well, I think we can play back the podcast if you wish.
Yeah,
actually.
Go ahead then. Go on.
Not at the moment, but you know it is there.
Because I think that, you know, it would have been nice to have actually. It all seems to be after the fact, doesn't it? You know, they do a nice patched out for an entire season. They have his daughter in there, and they have sort of put him as a sideman. I just wish they'd kind of basically employed the guy when he was alive, as opposed to, you know. But that was more Russell B. Davis's fault, really, than Moffat's fault. But what I'm trying to say is that having watched... What's that noise, Fiona?
Nothing. Never mind.
Stop doing it.
Yeah, what are you doing, Fiona? Are you deliberately sabotaging, you know, Alan Stevens' sort of contributions to the whole thing here?
No, it's a technical problem. I'm leaving the country tomorrow for a week.
It wasn't something we said, surely?
No, it's nothing you said, but it's something someone else said.
Oh.
Meaning that I've got to, you know, go back to Canada for a week for family reasons.
No worries.
And the printer cartridge won't print. No. So,
don't you just hate it when that happens? Yeah. Alan, it's perfectly obvious. The printer cartridge won't print, for goodness sakes. Yeah. Have some sensitivity, you know.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, back to me. Yes, back to you.
Anyway, so I was reading various things on the internet, people saying things about it, and I thought, you know, all these criticisms might be true. And I watched it back, episode 1 and 2, or, you know, Dark Water, and I thought, actually, none of them are valid at all. They all made perfect sense. And so I then went on to the internet and I said to various people who've been, you know, as I normally do, jump in for feet first, fist flying, and say, okay, right, I think this story actually makes perfect sense. And the things they question themselves, and this mixes, and this one. And I said, any questions? I'll answer them. And this guy came back and said, well, how did this work? How did that work? I answered them again. And then someone else came back, and I answered them also, because basically, it's all there in the story. And finally, Kevin Davis, you know, the director guy, came on and said, no, Alan's actually absolutely right. If you just watch it, it's a bit confusing the first time, but if you watch it the second time, it all does add up. And by watching the last first three episodes yesterday, and I'll probably watch two more today when we're doing our review things, I think you'll get a sort of a greater thematic picture than we do at the moment by saying, oh, well, we've watched this for 13 weeks while we've been doing some other stuff and what was it all about. So, I mean, I think on reflection, it was the best season they've done. I mean, there were certain things that didn't work. But then again, if you are story running a season, you cannot, and you've got time limits and budget limits, you cannot concentrate to make every story perfect. You will ask us at the number row to submit stories, and they will submit stories, and one story, it seems to be working okay, will finally come in, and it'll be a dud. And you'll think to yourself, well, do I spend time writing... you know, rewriting this script from a sort of an average script to make it a very, very good script, or do I actually, you know, put more effort into the stories that I'm writing with my name on? And I think, you know, though obviously, you know, it would be great if you could, you know, you could spend your time on all these stories and make them all perfect. Sometimes it can't, and sometimes you've got a story and you think, well, this is never going to work. I mean, the one with the trees and the forest of the night, this is never going to work. What do I do? Okay, we can throw it in the bin and get another writer in, but is that going to work? And how long have you got before the next, you know, before the recording? The director's been cast, the director's been sorted out. We've got to cast this thing. We've got to get location stuff. Eventually, you've just got to have this dog and say, okay, we'll make it, and you know, and then we'll get on to the next one. So, I mean, the same thing is true of Blake 7. There was some great episodes of Blake 7. There was also some awful episodes of Blake 7. The same true is Battlestar Galactica. We just finished that book on Battlestar Galactica. There is, you know, there are stories which just really shouldn't have been made, but they were made because they had to do a number of episodes by a certain amount of time, and sometimes you've just got no... So I think that it's very easy when you're watching through a show to say, well, this episode was rubbish, wasn't it? It must be all rubbish. And that's not really fair. I think that there are poor episodes, but there have always been poor episodes of shows, and there have always been poor episodes of Doctor Who. My God,
And I think that's the moment where we have to draw the final line over the Peter Capaldi debut season of Doctor Who. We might come back and revisit it another time, but otherwise people might well be tuning out now saying, enough already, please. You know, we want...
I'd also say that the reason there's problems with Danny Pink character is because I think that Dark Water and Death in Heaven were written first, and then they retro-engineered back the character, because it does seem... It doesn't seem like a character naturally develops. It's like when they said, okay, well, this is what happens, and this is what happens here. And the same thing happened, I think, to Graham Harper when he was doing season two. He did two stories back-to-back. He did Rise of Cybermen, Age of Steel, and then he did Army of Ghosts, Doomsday. And then they went and did the rest of the season. And you saw various writers, various things appearing, like the moon appearing and birds' names appearing and ghosts, shadows. And we thought, what is all this about? What is leading up to? And what effectively he was doing was that writers had come in, and they'd either watched or read that script, and they were being, you know, influenced by it, and they were putting it in there, but it wasn't leading anywhere. It was just ephemera. They were, you know, sort of from the collective unconscious. So working back from an ending is a problematic approach, I think.
I find the same thing
form on, it.
On every particular program we go. But Jessica, the last two questions, please, for Alan and Fiona Moore. Please.
Okay. Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today?
As always, yes.
Oh, great. And will we be hearing from you in the near future?
Well, you haven't asked me to score it, have you?
No, because I sent it to Fiona. Were you not listening? We weren't going to do that. You can't quantify this. It was, you know, you make your own mind. I know, Alan, you will, but no, I'm not going to ask you. You're sorry. You know, I think we've already sort of hold that. Actually, we'll hold that. We might use that as a little cliffhanger ending, a bit like Santa Claus when he comes and actually sort of says his little things.
Santa Claus has absolutely nothing to do with that story, is it? It's the next story, you know.
Exactly.
It's basically some of the top sequence starting, and they stuck a trailer in for the next story. The next story may be awful, but, I mean, you know, just because the next story is awful or brilliant, it doesn't mean the story before is going to be awful or brilliant as well.
Well, and it's all a matter of taste. But I take it you'll both return. That was your cue to actually say, yes, of course we will. Even when we're back from Canada, we'll return.
Of course we will.
Exactly. Sometimes. Coming up next, Pauline Fleming, an actress who, of course, when she's not starring in Testing Times, was indeed Mike Baldwin's last girlfriend in Coronation Street. Casey Musgraves takes her silver lining off into the far future. Earlier today, of course, we were privileged to actually speak to Steve Burbridge on the Inspired on Air monthly programme that we put out here on Siren 107.3 FM and, of course, southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. Now, live from a restaurant somewhere in the north of England, not only an actress who's been in Emmerdale and Coronation Street, but she is in Testing Times as well. It's the legend that is Pauline Fleming. Pauline, how are you?
Yeah, I'm fine, thank you.
Brilliant.
It's a little Italian restaurant in South Shields, I'm in, actually.
South Shields. That's fantastic. You can name check the restaurant if you wish, if it'll actually help reduce the cost of the bill. You know, feel free to do that. You know?
Well, it's Da Vinci's.
Da Vinci's. So there
South
we are.
Shields, yes.
When we're doing the location report in South Shields, Da Vinci's is clearly the place to go to. In case you're wondering, it's Da Vinci's of South Shields. Other restaurants are available, but not necessarily in South Shields. So there we are. Good stuff there. Pauline, Mike Baldwin's last official girlfriend. So
indeed
significant in all sorts of ways. That wait, had Graham Harper started directing the series then when Mike was around?
No,
that's okay, because we're just talking with Graham in the early part of the show about his work on Hollyoaks.
Don't know Graham.
Yeah, well, yet you see, that's the key thing. You know, once he catches wind of this thing, you know, he'll be on the phone saying, "Can you do Casualty after you've done testing times?"
Oh, I'd love that. I've never done Casualty. Yeah, that'd be great.
Well, he connects together. But in terms of, obviously, I don't know, Emma, do you remember Mac Baldwin and
no,
played by Johnny Brooks?
My nan is a huge fan of all soaps. She watches Coronation Street, Emmerdale, EastEnders. She literally watches them all back to back, which slightly drives my family crazy. But because you walk in the room and you walk back out and then you walk in again and it's a different show and you're very confused. But She's a really avid fan, and I wanted to know, actually, Pauline, have you, like, had experience with fans? Because I know that especially fans with Coronation Street and stuff get really passionate.
Well, they absolutely, you know.
They do get very passionate about it. And with Coronation, I did Bookside as well, as you may know.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
A long, long, long time ago, because that was my hometown. The fan base there was very different. And I'd gone into the show after the guy had been buried under the patio.
Yeah, always a realistic storyline, I felt, really.
That's a realistic, and it was funny because all the fan mail I got was, "Oh, thank God, Sinbad's found somebody lovely now."
Everyone's favourite Auntie Val. Let's
face it. Auntie Val. that was great because that was my hometown. But when I went into Corrie, it was a very different ball game, really, because it's such an institution, Coronation Street, and it's such a massive show, and it is global. It's world known. The fan base, again, was just very different. Johnny Briggs told me that a couple of times he got fan mail addressed to Mike Baldwin, Manchester. And he still received it.
And let's be honest, Pauline, you were knickerwear entrepreneur Penny King.
Indeed. My character was more wealthy than his.
Yeah, you are. You see, that's what you call redressing the balance. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's genius. Pauline, I was amazed to find, assuming that all is true in our research here, that actually you read English at Liverpool University and your motivation was a fear of Shakespeare.
Wow. No way.
What made you a Shakespeareophobe?
Because I wanted to play, I wanted to perform Shakespeare, I didn't feel qualified to do it because I hadn't studied it academically. Mm-hmm. So when I went to university as a mature student, I finally felt qualified to do it. I know it may sound, because lots of actors don't study Shakespeare academically.
And they can continue to sort of get into all sorts of method ways from that point of view. You don't have to sort of know that we are glad the Dauphin is so pleasant with our pranes when we have matched our rackets to these balls we shall in France by God's grace play such and strike his father's crown. No, we don't have to do that way, you know?
You big show-off.
Just to kind of, you know, hopefully sort of just psych the whole thing up. There is, of course...
I'm Gary. I'm Matt.
I'm Rippy. And we are the Reduced Shakespeare Company. And you're listening to the Midweek Drive on Siren FM.
Just because you wonder, the Reduced Shakespeare Company are not a series of small actors. You know, they are, you know, they do the whole thing. Complete works of Shakespeare there. Actors of restricted
Brilliant.
Service. Yeah.
Brilliant, loving it.
It just works all that sort of way. Listen, we need to mention obviously what you're currently portraying, which is Will Grave, garner rave reviews because you have joined the wonderful Testing Times play, which is performing, etc. Share with us some thoughts about that, because it's all about how people cope. It's different stories. Steve kind of shared with us, obviously, as the playwright, some of the key things about that. And Steve is beyond excited by the fact when you join the company, and quite rightly so. You know, it is the Pauline Fleming, you know, as we rightly said. For that point of view. So in terms of getting back on stage and doing that, I mean, clearly you've got the vagina monologues, you've got a whole range of sort of stuff that's worked through from that point of view. What was it that's attracted you about, you know, the kind of small but perfectly formed work of Testing Times?
Well, first and foremost, Stephen is a friend of mine, and we met during the tour of the Eva Cassidy story.
Of course.
Where I was playing Barbara Cassidy.
Yep.
And we've been friends ever since. When he asked me to join the cast of Testing Times, which was last April, I think he'd lost his Brenda at that point and asked me to come in last minute.
Very careless of him, really? But never mind.
Yeah. But at that stage, you know, I just came in, I went in and did it as a favour, you know, for want of a better expression. And it was a work in progress thing. It was more like a play reading at that point. Now he's done lots of rewrites on it and developed it, recast one of the characters, and it's a real piece that's still in development, but really becoming quite a dramatic show. And I'm really happy for Steve that he's managed to achieve it, because it is very passionate to him. It's his life. He doesn't have AIDS, but as a, you know, as a raving homosexual, he wants to write about that world.
Well, there we are.
Quite rightly, yeah. And it's funny. It's provocative. It's sexy. It's dramatic, and we've really done something with it this time around for the People's Theatre. And you know, we are all very excited.
You were almost describing yourself there, Pauline. Just looking at some of the photographs there online, so the Pauline Fleming, you know, provocative, you know, sexy. Oh, marvellous stuff! That's great. But astoundingly, we need to fly over to Los Angeles now to actually sort of connect with Fillion, as time is tight. It's coming up to 11:20 in LA time. So the last two questions.
Go for it.
Well, exactly. We need to ask you: have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic debut on the Midweek Drive today, Pauline Fleming?
I have indeed. It's been great.
And can we look forward to connecting with you again in the very near future?
You will.
Yay,
thank
exactly.
You.
That's Pauline Fleming from, of course, Da Vinci's Restaurant in South Shields. Okay, that's if they don't give you a discount for that amount of plug and promotion, then you know, I would say just don't return. That's the important thing.
Lovely to talk to you.
Let her